Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, June 1st, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. And Alex, can you believe that it's June?
It's crazy. And I know. Quite frankly, Graham, we've had some amazing summer weather here in Cornwall. It's been fantastic.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, the weather, I mean, I got to say this ever since COVID-19 appeared on the scene, like the weather here in France has actually been really amazing. Like, I don't know what's happened, but somebody, you know, there's just hasn't rained much at all. So, yeah, well, I guess we have that. That's at least like the silver lining maybe in all of this. But I'm glad that the weather has been kind to you, because I know it could be quite rainy in like May and stuff in Cornwall now.
Yeah. But no, we're very lucky.
Good. So a lot of stuff going on this week. I'm starting to feel like, even though there continues to be a lot of active dialogue in our chat rooms and on the wires about what's going to happen this fall with kids who've got their offers, et cetera, I feel like we're sort of turning a page, or certainly beginning to. And the reason I say that is because Harvard Business School announced their deadlines for the coming admissions season. They have a first round deadline of September 8th. It's actually almost like a week later than it was last year. And I don't know if that's just because of where the, you know, Labor Day holiday falls, or maybe it's the committee saying, you know what, let's give people a little more time given everything that's been transpiring. But that's their first deadline. The application will be available and like open to, you know, you can go online and complete it starting in mid-June. And in a note, Chad Losey wrote on their site, he's the director of admissions, he wrote that, you know, the outcome is going to be understanding of COVID-19 induced issues, which I, you know, like unemployment or, you know, anything that may have happened to people who are in the, you know, admissions process because of all this. So any thoughts on what HBS has done here, pushing things back a bit, being understanding, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's great that HBS is going to be understanding, and as will all the other top programs, but quite frankly, I still think it means that you've got to be smart about stuff. If you are rendered unemployed because of the current situation, which many folks will be, sadly, it doesn't mean to say that the top schools are going to be like, well, that's why they didn't do anything for 3 months.
Right.
They're going to want to know what you do in that 3 month period, whether it's volunteering, other self-improvement, or whatever it might be. This is not an excuse, obviously, and I'm talking to smart people here. They understand this. You need to be active. You need to be doing stuff if you're in the unfortunate situation of being unemployed.
Right, and binge watching the entire series of Game of Thrones does not count as an activity, just to be clear here.
Yeah.
So people need to be doing something.
Breaking Bad might not be such a bad idea. No, I'm kidding. But the other thing I thought was interesting, I didn't know if you picked up on this, Graham, is they swapped the 2+2 deadline to very late. Almost like they're completely separating that process from their regular admissions process. So anyway, I just picked up on that for
it's gonna be later.
Some obscure reason.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that too. The other big news was that Wharton published their deadline. So a couple of great schools leading the way here. And Wharton's first round deadline is going to be September 15th, which is more or less the same. It's actually 2 days earlier than last year. And the big news out of Wharton was that they're actually changing one of their essays. So they've always had, for at least several years now, they've had two essays. And one of them is, what do you hope to gain professionally from the Wharton MBA, which is, you know, effectively a career goals essay. And that's going to be the same, right? But they have the second essay, which this year is going to be taking into consideration your background, personal, professional, or academic. How do you plan to make specific, meaningful contributions to the Wharton community? And that's a 400-word essay. It's new. And I should stress that they actually say personal, professional, and or academic. So you could have a mix of all three or just one of the three as you describe how you're going to contribute. And this is a departure because last year, and actually I think in years prior as well, they had this essay which was describe an impactful experience or accomplishment that's not reflected elsewhere in your application. How will you use what you learned through that experience to contribute to the Wharton community? So what I always thought was strange about that essay is that it was effectively two essays masquerading as one, you know, because it was an accomplishment essay, but then you had to also figure out what did you learn from that accomplishment and how are you going to bring that into the Wharton community?
So, almost like you got to shoehorn one answer into the other.
Yeah, which I think was tricky for candidates. And also this not reflected elsewhere in your application, like that's sort of like, well, wait, if I have an achievement that was on my resume, does that mean I can't write about it? Like, it was just sort of a strange question. So I think this year's is much better. It's open-ended. And it's exactly what I would want to see if I were an admissions officer. It's like, I just want to know what is someone bringing to the table? And that could be personal, professional, or academic, or, you know, some combination, right? So I think it's great. Hats off to Wharton for making that change. I think it'll be, you know, give them some great information and also just be easier for applicants to kind of figure it out.
Do you think, Graham, any schools are going to ask essay questions directly related to COVID-19?
That's a great question. I think, you know, not a school like Harvard or Wharton where they just have such little room to work with. But, you know, some schools have like, you know, 3, 4, maybe even 5 essays or even short answers, you know, within their application materials. And so it could come up. I think, you know, one thing's for sure, there'll probably be applicants who write about it in some way, shape or form, because, you know, if they lost a loved one or if it somehow directly impacted the line of work they're in, maybe somebody's working for AstraZeneca and you know, or in biotech or pharma in general, you know, like what they've obviously going to have had some pretty interesting experiences over the last few months. So I think it'll come up, but I don't know if a school is going to use it as a direct question. I think only if they have a lot of questions to spare kind of thing.
Yeah, very good.
The last thing I wanted to mention is that we teased last week about a new webinar series, kind of like an admissions academy that we're going to be running this summer. And there's, you know, an announcement is literally hours away. So as you listen to this, stay tuned to our website. You're going to hear all about it. But we have a webinar series that we're going to run every couple of weeks on key topics to help people really find success in the admissions process. It's free. I mean, it's just no brainer. Sign up for it. Come every 2 weeks. We'll try to keep it to an hour, hour and a half at most. We'll take Q&A and we'll go through all the basics and get people set so that they can be successful as they apply in the fall. But I'm really excited about that. Alex, we have a lot of work to do to prep for it, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. And I think one of the reasons why I'm excited for it, I mean, in a sort of a strange, perverse kind of way, is next season's application cycle is going to be different.
Yeah.
There's no doubt in my mind the COVID-19 situation, which we're all experiencing, is changing the landscape. It's absolutely going to change how you learn more about MBA programs, how you should prepare and how you apply. And we've already talked about, you know, schools' sort of understanding of folks applying without employment at the time and what they should be doing. Applying to business school next season is going to be different to previous seasons.
Yeah, fair. Yeah. And I think, so stay tuned. We'll get word out about that. I don't know yet. I'm waiting to hear whether spaces are going to be limited, and they may be. So just stay tuned and sign up. I want to try to accommodate as many people as we can in this thing. So we'll see where we go. Other than that, the only thing I wanted to mention is that if you're listening to this podcast, please, you know, write a review or at least rate the podcast wherever you listen. It'd be great to get that feedback. And also just spread the word. This is that time of year where if you're a current applicant who's sitting on decisions and enjoys listening because you followed us through the whole journey this past season, please tell anyone you know that's applying, you know, this coming season, because we love to see that baton passed as, you know, we kind of get into the new season. Other than that, Alex, you picked out a couple of ApplyWire entries and one DecisionWire. And so should we just dive on in and get with the program here?
Sounds good.
All right. So Wiretap's candidate number one. This person is an ApplyWire. This is an ApplyWire entry, and they are applying to Cornell, Duke, Michigan, NYU, UCLA, Wharton, UT Austin, UVA, and Vanderbilt. This person is applying to start in the fall of 2021. Their current kind of pre-MBA career is in real estate, and they want to make the pivot over into asset management. And looking at companies like BlackRock, and they're actually still interested in real estate, but moving really to the finance side of it. GRE score 318, GPA 2.98, and 4.5 years of experience. This person's in New York City and would love to either stay there or end up in California after business school. They did offer some notes. They mentioned they were a Division I athlete and captain during their senior year of college. GPA is low. in part because their freshman year GPA, which was a 3.88, was completed at a junior college, and so that didn't count in their overall GPA. They mentioned that they currently work as a real estate agent in New York City, started as like a commercial real estate broker, but switched to residential, and then over the last year joined a team and have taken over a nice book of business. They want to stay, as I said, in that domain, but move to kind of the financial side. And, you know, that's kind of the background. Now, you had some dialogue with this individual because you raised some red flag concerns and things. So tell us a little bit about what you think of this candidate.
Yeah, I mean, obviously on the surface, the numbers don't stand out in this candidate's favor. And they have some time, so potentially they can consider retaking the GRE. They could do some additional coursework or whatever it is to try to bump up the transcript. I understand, their GPA doesn't include what was a good start in a junior college, but then, you know, that then begs the question, does the grade start going down versus going up, because we like to see progression and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So there are going to be some challenges there, and I think the candidate's fully aware of those challenges and taking any of the appropriate steps. The thing that sort of concerned me more, and therefore the reason why I wanted to discuss this today on our podcast, is that, you know, it became quite clear to me looking at this profile that this is a candidate who has likely either lost their job or their job has clearly slimmed down significantly. If you're doing residential real estate in New York City under COVID-19 situation, there's probably not a lot of activity occurring at this point. And the ADCOM's going to know that. And so my question to the candidate was, well, what are you currently doing given this current environment? And they talked about an idea and a thing that they tried to get off the ground, and then they were let down by their business partner, whatever it might have been. But my point is, for a candidate like this, you've got to... We all recognize many of us are under very challenging circumstances, and the ADCOM is going to look at how do you respond in these circumstances? What do you do? How do you react? These are traits that are very important to successful business leaders going forward, right?
Right.
So, you know, the candidate expressed the issue that maybe they were let down by their business partner, but what are you going to do about it, all right?
Right.
The next 3 or 4 months, what are you going to be doing? How are you going to volunteer? How are you going to do self-improvement and so on and so forth? So it's fair enough you might be retaking the GRE or doing some academic work, but I want to see a candidate like this get proactive, do something impactful. You're going to be in an applicant pool with lots of other folk facing very similar circumstances, which is unfortunate for all of you, but the ADCOM are going to really favour the folks that took the adverse circumstances that were thrown at them, yet still were able to do some interesting, impactful stuff, even if it wasn't for a paycheck.
Agreed. Yeah, I think there were several things for me with this candidate. I mean, I did have some questions. So first of all, the spread of schools that they're considering, which ranges from like sort of Wharton to Vanderbilt, is not bad, right? I mean, that's a good spread of schools, kind of anywhere from, you know, your top 5 to... what, top 25 or something, right? So they have a good range, but I really worry about the numbers. And I think, you know, they need to retake the GRE, as you said. Getting over the 320 threshold would at least, you know, make things a little bit more palatable for the schools towards the bottom end. And if they can get into the mid 320s, obviously, then they start to be more appealing to the top schools on their list. I will say it's so rare for a sub 3.0 GPA to make the cut at a like M7 or even top 10 type school. But I was curious to know more about their experience. You know, are they a bootstrapper who started at junior college and then managed to get an athletic scholarship to, you know, Div 1 to go to college? Are they from a socially, you know, or socioeconomically disadvantaged background? Are they an underrepresented minority? I mean, there's so many possibilities that we don't have we just don't have a full picture.
Yeah.
So I would want to know more about that. I totally agree with you, though, that the description of their extracurricular project, which was related to helping deliver, you know, materials for the medical profession in the wake of COVID-19. It sort of fell through, this project, but they kind of, you know, sort of blame their business partner, which very well may be true. Like, I'm sure that, you know, this just was a bad, you know, somebody didn't pull their weight, it sounds like. But I was a little worried in reading that, like you said, it's like, well, what are you going to do about it beyond just throwing your business partner under the bus and saying it was their fault? You know, so there needs to be more there. And, you know, I think it's great that they play a lot of sports. They pointed out that they want to keep doing that while they're young. And as someone who's a little bit older than they are, I understand that. But I also kind of feel like they need to probably do more than just that. You don't want to be one dimensional.
Yeah.
So there's work to be done here. The good news is they have time. They can retake the test. They can take some outside classes. They could get going with some extracurriculars. And hopefully the housing market starts to pick up a little bit and they can get working again. It's hard to know if they've like sort of been laid off or if they just, you know, I have some friends who work in real estate and they're not laid off. They're just, it's just like completely stagnant. So there's like nothing to do, you know? So that's the issue. But I think this, you know, could be interesting story. Like, as I said, there are a lot of unknowns that I'd love to have more info on.
Yeah. And quite honestly, you know, the person, I don't even know if we know the gender, but the person is a, you know, Division I athlete, was captain senior year. So, you know, clearly could be some really good, strong character stuff coming out here.
Absolutely.
And stuff. So I don't mean to be harsh.
Right.
But I just want to, you know, prepare folks that have had a bad hand during COVID-19, that there are going to be many of you in that situation, and the ADCOM is going to scrutinize how you've reacted to that. So applying to business school, as Harvard has basically said, as someone that's potentially unemployed, is not going to be the issue. It's what do you do with your time, right, if you're not currently working for a paycheck.
And I will say that this is the third time in my career that we've seen this. So, you know, you had the dot-com bubble burst, and so you had all these people applying to business school who were out of a job. Then you had the 2008 financial crisis. Again, lots of people lost jobs and then were applying to business school. So schools have seen this before. But as you correctly point out, it's always like, what do you do with that time? Are you sitting around, you know, playing the Xbox and binge watching TV, or are you like doing things in your community, or, you know, just getting on with your life, like figuring out what your next step is?
Right.
And it's not enough to say, oh, I spent all this extra time prepping to get into business school. That doesn't cut it, really.
Yeah. Or learning Chinese, like do something.
Yeah.
That's completely out of your comfort zone, if that's what you have the time to do. Yeah.
There you go. All right. So thanks to that person for putting up their profile. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is another ApplyWire candidate, and they're again targeting fall of 2021, looking at schools that include Harvard, Kellogg, Chicago Booth, and Wharton. This person is an Army officer and has been working for 5 years. They would love to pivot from the military into consulting and are looking at Bain, BCG, and McKinsey. GMAT score, 770, and a GPA of 4.0. Living in the U.S. now, they would love to end up in New York long term. They note that they spent 3 years living and working in Italy. I believe the U.S. has a base there, or maybe there's a, you know, NATO. I don't know what would have brought them there, but there must be something.
Pasta.
And then they said, I have a lot of experience leading and managing teams and projects. So, yeah, what do you make of this? You had a bit of dialogue with this person after they posted. What do you think of this person? I mean, obviously the numbers are off the charts.
Yeah, frankly, I don't know why we're featuring this person. I must have had a bit of a brain freeze, because quite honestly, assuming that the military career is strong with strong letters of support, and there's a cogent story in terms of why the MBA and that matches well with the sort of consulting then into tech. So if they've done some tech related type stuff in their military experience, schools are going to love this person. They've got to. They've just got to execute well on their applications, Graham. And frankly, we probably don't really need to spend too long talking about it.
So, I agree that this person is, they have everything in place to be a home run. And obviously, we don't know enough about the military experience and such. But assuming, you know, 5 years, three of it's international, this is a home run, right? But as some of our listeners know who tuned in to the podcast we recorded with Anna Ivey, who's the founder of Service to School, there are a lot of like pitfalls that military applicants can sort of slip into. You know, there's some positive stereotyping that happens around leadership and, you know, teamwork and all that stuff. But then, you know, military applicants often make kind of silly mistakes, and they, you know, I encourage people to listen to that podcast if you're a military person applying to business school, because from using too much jargon to, you know, getting into too much the kind of gory battlefield stuff, like there are things you can do that might turn the reader off or not have them feel that you can make the leap from, you know, service to school, right? So, but again, this person, it's all going to come down to execution. And I agree, we don't need to spend too much time. What did you think of the school selection? I mean, they, you know, they have four schools, they're all M7 schools, but I thought it was interesting. They don't have Stanford on the list. There's no MIT or Columbia, and they do mention maybe getting into tech at some point. So was there any thought on that part? Because I just wondered what you thought of that.
Yeah, I mean, they should look at Stanford's first essay, which is always my best advice to anyone applying to any top school.
Yeah.
And if they can come up with a very good response to that first essay, they should be applying to Stanford. This person should be going, targeting the very, very best for sure. So yeah, Stanford, Sloan, they absolutely should be in the mix.
Yeah, and I know they want to end up in New York, and so, you know, obviously they have to weigh all that and look at alumni networks.
Yeah.
But anyway, great candidate. Thanks for the post, and yeah, we'll see how it all works out for them. Let's move on and talk about our third wiretaps. So this is wiretaps candidate number three. And this one is a DecisionWire entry. This person is undecided. They've been admitted to UNC Kenan Flagler. And so you might say, well, why are they undecided? That's the only admit they have. But it turns out they also applied to Cornell, Duke, Georgetown, and obviously UNC, and that they're on the waiting list at Cornell and Georgetown. And they're going to be starting, you know, this fall. They want to get into investment banking, working at companies like, you know, Bank of America, Credit Suisse, Goldman, JP Morgan, all the usual suspects. So, you know, GMAT score was 650, GPA 372. They're in Pennsylvania, and they've been working, I guess, for 5 years in private wealth management. They've got the CFA, and their big debate is like, what do they do? They've got the offer at UNC, but they're wondering, like, how hard should they play that wait list at Cornell? And they're even curious about Georgetown, but most of the debate that ensued on the site was really about, do you push for the waitlist at Cornell? Is Cornell better than UNC if you want to get into banking? So do you want to just highlight some of that? Because I thought it was fantastic, the number of people that weighed in, including our co-founder, Elliot, you know, that just a lot of debate back and forth on this.
Yeah, we have some passionate folks. So
yeah,
it is quite interesting, you know, the longer you get into a cycle, a season, and we're getting towards the end of this cycle and season, as it were, but the longer you get into it, we do tend to see more passion in terms of different folks advocating for different schools. Some of that might well be that they've gotten into one of the schools that they're going to, so they're
exactly
advocating for the school that they're going to. But another reason is probably they just know more about the different schools. They've done the research and stuff, and they want to share their thoughts and opinions. But it is interesting. I really enjoy, actually, the back and forth at this stage of the season as people express their opinion. I would say, Graham, So right now, the person has one option, and if they're left with one option, UNC Kenan Flagler, that option is absolutely good to get them to what they want to do, investment banking in New York. I think there is definitely a pathway from Kenan Flagler to do that, right? So should they spend time, effort and energy really trying to get off the waitlist at Cornell? Well, and that seems to be the debate on DecisionWire. The argument is that potentially Cornell is going to provide them a little bit greater access to investment banking in New York City. And, you know, there's back and forth. Some folks agree with that opinion. Other folks say, well, actually, Kenan Flagler's going to give you just as good access. Where do I sit on that debate? I think probably Cornell's going to give you a little bit more access, but both schools will give you access. The candidate has a great GPA, 372, but the GMAT's only 650, so I wonder how committed this person is to the waitlist process if they haven't looked at retaking that test. I don't even know if they're able to retake the test in the current circumstances. I suppose they can do it from home. But it's, if you really do think Cornell is going to provide you more access and you want to get off the wait list, I would be, as a, you know, as a Cornell admissions officer and you're on the wait list, I'd be looking to see what you've done about that 650 GMAT grade.
Yeah, I could not agree more. So I think, first of all, there was all this debate on the site about, like, oh, which school's in which tier. And I think, you know, a lot of people suggested that Cornell's like a tier above. And I think that's fair. I mean, I think if you look at who these schools travel with, where they go, you know, there are these groupings. Cornell tends to do these events with Yale and NYU and Berkeley. And so I think, you know, you can make the argument that Cornell is above UNC in the rankings or whatever. And I think also the proximity to New York City, the Ivy League network, and, you know, just reputation in finance overall makes it a, you know, a good school and one worth maybe fighting for on the wait list. With that said, I personally have always been a big fan of UNC's concentrations. They're one of the few schools that have what they call career concentrations. So it's not like you major in strategy or corporate finance. You literally, they have like a consulting concentration, or in this case, a capital markets and investments concentration. And employers love this stuff because you basically, you have this sort of tailored curriculum that's designed to get you ready to work in that field. And so I think, again, this person's got an offer at UNC. It's a terrific program, great culture. They'll have a blast. And yeah, frankly, GPA is great, but the GMAT was weak. And so I think, you know, getting into a UNC and going there, they'll have a great time and they'll get into banking if that's what they want to do. And they'll probably can get into banking in New York City if that's really what they're focused on. With that said, I think if they wanted to get into Cornell, they'd have to make a play. And the play, which was discussed in our forum here, is not tell Cornell that you have an admit to UNC. Because, I mean, if, you know, if they're just peer schools, or if obviously if Cornell's even a notch above or something, that's not going to really move the argument, really, I think. And so, like you pointed out, they would have to retake the test, I think. I mean, that's like probably the main thing that's kept them on the waiting list in the first place. So, yeah, I agree. If they really want Cornell, sign up for the GMAT online, do it at home. Get a 680, 700 or north of that if you can, and then, you know, go back to Cornell and say, hey, I've, you know, taken the test and this is my new result. That would probably help more than anything else, in my view. And I think you're dead on. If they haven't done that, I don't know that Cornell's going to find much room for them.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, Keenan Flagler, great option to have. So either which way it all ends up, they're in great shape. But yeah, if they want to get off that Cornell waitlist, I think they need to do something about it, to be pretty deliberate.
Yeah, and I think my view is that they kind of posed the question about unsure about Georgetown. Georgetown's another great school, but I think given that they have an offer to UNC and are on the waitlist at Cornell, and that both those programs have traditionally ranked, you know, several slots higher. And my sense is, you know, they both do well in banking. Like, I don't see why they would need to really stay on the wait list at Georgetown. If anything, they might want to free up that space for someone who, you know, who could use it. Right. So, in any event, that's my view there. But, you know, again, appreciate this person sharing. I'm hoping that they got a lot out of the responses, because there was definitely, I don't know if it was, you know, 8-10 comments from people, you know, kind of weighing in on this. So again, best of luck to that person if they end up at UNC or Cornell. I'm sure they're going to land on their feet. Sounds like they have a good head on their shoulders. So anything else, Alex, for this week? I mean, I know that it's this weird moment in the season where we actually had, you know, more comments and discussion on the site, you know, last week about, you know, all kinds of, you know, decision making and late round applications and should people go or not. I mean, there's been all this activity, but yet we're also beginning to see, you know, the new season where Harvard's announcing their deadlines and Wharton's putting their new essay topic out, et cetera. So this is an interesting intersection kind of time of the year. And I'm really excited for this webinar series that we're going to launch. And yeah, so I don't have anything else this week, but I'm looking forward to, you know, we'll be back at it next week with another set of people to dissect and hopefully more news on the webinar series too.
Yeah, I just want to say that I've got past 400, Graham. You decided not to talk about it, but I'm just telling you.
Yeah, Alex has more than 400 likes on the site. The question is, do any of our power users, are there any of them catching you? That's what I would like to know.
we'll put it this way, they've got more likes than you.
I know. All right. We'll see you next week, I guess, and talk more about all this stuff.
Very good.
Thanks everyone for tuning in, as always.
Yeah, best of luck, everybody, and as always, stay safe.